Just a heads up, everyone. This podcast features adults having adult conversations, and there might be the chance of adult language. Also, we may talk about some difficult grieving experiences and themes of mental distress that can trigger some people. If this conversation stirs up some hard emotions for you, please reach out to someone you trust. Hi. I'm Tatiana Rotere, and you are listening to Crazy Grief, the podcast. Grief can make us feel like we're going crazy. It affects our emotions, our physical health, and our mental state. It has a huge impact in the way we relate to people and the way we see ourselves. Crazy Grief is a safe space for us to have candid conversations about grief and all the crazy stuff that comes with it. We are here to share our stories, how we cope with grief, and what kind of help really helps. If you lost your person and you feel like you're going crazy, let me reassure you, you're not going crazy. You're just grieving. So, let's talk about it. Hello, my dear friends. This is the very first Crazy Grief podcast episode of 2021. And what a year it has been, 2020. That was a really tough year for so many of us, right? And there was so much grief in all sorts of shapes and forms and colors. Grief was everywhere. Grief was the flavor of the year, I think, for 2020. And one of the things that I am grateful for amidst all of the really difficult, really heartbreaking things that so many of us faced in 2020 is that I think that now, as a collective, we are open to actually admit that we are grieving, not just the loss of a loved one, but the loss of health, the loss of dreams, the loss of our lifestyle or our livelihood for so many people that, you know, we completely had to change so much of what we do and how we do things and how we relate to other people. Who would say social distance would be part of our vocabulary, right? And even that, like the grieving process of not being able to touch the people that we love or to be with them as they are passing away. So much grief. But in that, the gratitude that I have is that I think as human beings, we are now a lot more open to just look at grief in the face and kind of admit that it's been there in so many times in our lives. Like we have grieved and so many of us never really admitted that we were grieving. We tried to push it down. But 2020 was the year that gave us the opportunity. It basically pushed us into this opportunity to reassess things and to start thinking about what are the griefs that I'm carrying and how do I actually address them? How do I face them? And how do I move with them and create a life that has also joy amidst the grief? Now, talking about creating a life that has joy amidst the grief, I am so pleased to introduce a wonderful woman, Megan Hillica. Megan is a mother of six beautiful children, five of them who are still here. One of them, her daughter Aria, has died. And Aria's death has plummeted Megan into a very, very heartbreaking, intense journey that she had to face PTSD. And it's been a really, really long journey where she has done the work to find healing in her brain and in her life. From the PTSD, like tackling that and really not pulling away from it, but working in it, Megan has developed herself and found those places where she could begin to nourish joyful things in her life, as well as finding new meaning and new purpose. So Megan wants everyone to know that PTSD is not a life sentence and that healing is possible. She found it. And so now she has become a grief coach, encouraging and supporting grieving mothers that through the worst thing that has happened to them. I mean, God, I can't even begin to fathom having to bury a child. But yes, through the worst thing that has happened to a mother, they can find that their life is not over. Megan has a mini course called Stop Talking, Start Feeling. In it, she helps people process grief and begin to connect with the scary and terrifying emotions that comes with it. So, Megan, it's my great, great privilege to introduce you. Happy New Year, and how are you?
Hi, thank you. I am so happy to be here. It always feels weird saying you're happy to be, you know, talking about grief, but Happy New Year to you. And I am so honored that you are holding this space and letting me talk about grief and share my journey and how, you know, all of us can begin to find joy amidst the grief that we all carry.
Yeah, it's such an important thing, isn't it? Because I think the joy that seems like it's completely gone, like when a person that you love died, or when we are just faced with so many things that just we feel bereft and alone, joy is gone. But having the intentionality and the conscious decision to find joy, even if it's in the smallest of things, this can start bringing that healing that we so desperately need when we are grieving. Wouldn't you say so?
Yeah. And I guess I hesitate too, is because sometimes we want to get to joy so fast that we want to get through the grief and not, you know, like, oh, well, if I'm feeling grief, all the emotions that come with it, I'm doing it wrong. So I need to get to joy. So I like to talk about walking with grief and joy and allowing the grief in. And sometimes you need to allow more grief in to experience more joy. Does that make sense? Sometimes we try to numb the grief and the pain because we're like, I just want to feel joy again. Mm-hmm. There's two kind of sides of the coin, because then it can be really scary to think about even being joyful, because it's, that means you're moving on or forgetting, or, you know, being like, well, my life is good again because I'm feeling joy, which is never like the actual truth of it. It's just, how can we hold space for the grief, the pain that we have over the one that we love that's not here, and have joy for our life as well?
Yeah, it is. I think that you just said something that is so incredible, because in my experience, I think that the people around me that love me and love my children and love my husband saw me suffering, and they didn't want me to suffer. And so they wanted me to kind of get to a place of finding the good things, you know, like think about memories of Jason, think about how wonderful it was, the opportunity that you had all those years together, think about the things that bring you joy. But joy comes in its own time. True joy comes in its own time. Yeah. And I think that if you do not feel the grief, if you suppress the grief and you go and you try to skip into joy, then it's a kind of like a fake joy, mm-hmm. and it's a forced joy, and it's not true joy, really, you know, because true joy comes from embodying the grief and the sadness and the anger and all the emotions that come with losing someone that you love, and yet finding that there are things still in your life. Not everything died with them, you know, there are, but that's a process. And if you don't do the grief process first, then all you're left with is with this kind of like, I don't know, fake joy that never truly hits the mark. And I think that we keep on pushing the grief away, trying to get to happy, trying to get to joyful, trying to get to gratitude, and never quite arriving there and not understanding why. So I wanted to start by talking a little bit about your experience with like feeling all the feelings, you know, because I know that you found Aria, right, when she died.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that really was really traumatic for you. Can you share with us a little bit about that experience, as much as you're comfortable with?
Yeah, for sure. I was 23 years old, and I was 36 weeks pregnant with our fourth child. And Aria was our third, and she died in the night. And I found her in the night. She was 15 months old. And it just, I think anytime you come to know loss, either expected or unexpected, it's a shock no matter what, because death is just so final and so, they're just like, it's so hard to wrap your brain around, like that they're gone and they died. And, you know, finding them gone is really traumatic. It was super traumatic for me. I was diagnosed with PTSD, and even just like walking the grief journey, I think you like wake up every day and you're like, this is not my life. I don't want this to be my life. You know, you just, the grief is so painful. I remember just wanting to go to sleep and kind of waking up on the other side of what I thought could, you know, maybe it would feel better on the other side of all this pain that is in front of me and I don't want to go through. And I was really blessed to have somebody in my life who had already had lost a child as well, and who had told me that there is no way through grief but through grief. And there's no way to, you know, move forward but to feel the pain and experience the emotions. And I don't know if that's totally what she meant, but that's the way I took it. And I really dove deep into doing the grief work, as I say, and processing the emotions, and really, even with the trauma, for me, understanding that I had trauma and that, you know, my body was in this state of stuck and not being able to live in a way that I wanted to, where I felt like I was barely surviving every single day and I wasn't able to do anything. I wasn't able to be the mom that I wanted to be. I wasn't able to take care of my kids in the way that I wanted to. My life felt like I was waiting for the other shoe to drop every single day. I felt like I was going to crack any moment. And I just knew I needed help. I knew I needed to get through this because I was like, I'm 23, you know, looking at my whole life ahead of me. I'm like, is this what I have the rest of my life? This is how I'm going to live the rest of my life. And I didn't want to live that way the rest of my life. It felt really intimidating and scary. Like it couldn't change. Like what could possibly change? This is just how I have to be. But as I dove into the work, as I began to process my emotions and really feel and experience them, as I did the work for the trauma, I did EMDR for PTSD, and I really spent many, many hours in my therapist's office, which I'm really grateful for. He taught me a lot about processing my emotions and feeling them in my body and noticing what's going on in my body. I learned that the heavy, heavy weight that I was carrying could get lighter, and that it didn't mean that, you know, I don't miss Aria. I miss her every single day, but it comes in waves. It comes and goes, it ebbs and flows. And she is a part of our every single day. She's, you know, every day I think about her, and through the work I'm doing, obviously I talk about her a lot. But it's just that when you feel all the pain, that is when you can also start to feel joy and hope. And like, because when your child dies, or even for you, when your husband died, it's hard to look at your future and be like, how am I going to do this? Like, I can't live without them. Like, how am I supposed to live the rest of my life this way? And so when you can begin to feel hope again, it's like, whoa, I can look forward to my future and be excited about my future. And that doesn't mean I'm moving on or forgetting them, or that I know that I'm carrying them with me. So something I say a lot is I help moms really learn to live and carry their grief instead of suffering with the grief that they feel.
And that's the key, isn't it? Like living with the grief instead of allowing the grief to be to take the center stage and suffer with the grief all the time. Definitely there is a suffering in grief that we carry every day, but I also had to do the work of re-empowering myself and reimagine my future so that grief would be a part of my life, because Jason will always be a part of my life, as Aria is always going to be a part of your life. Mm-hmm. We don't erase them when we start feeling joy. We don't forget them when we start creating new experiences for us and for our children that are still here. But definitely, yeah, just how do we find that balance of like, I am still grieving my husband, I am still grieving my child, and yet I am finding, just being really conscious and really intentional about finding joy in the things that I do, so I can start to create a new future, because the future that we had when they were here, that future is gone. But that doesn't mean that all future is gone, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's something I always think of, grief as many layers. Like, with that's a layer of grief that we need to grieve and process. Like, the future that we had is not there anymore. And it might come up, you know, throughout life of, at a certain time, you know, this, you know, maybe for you, it's anniversaries or whatever. For all of us, it's those days that we're like, oh, they should be this age, or this would have been, you know, this many years or whatever. And you miss them and it comes up, but it's just a, when you can learn, for me, this has been the biggest thing, is understanding that grief is a part of my life. It is something I walk with every single day. And instead of fighting the grief that I have, I welcome it in. I let it be there. And when I don't fight it, it's not as scary anymore. It's really like, I almost imagine it like a garden that I need to tend to. I need to care for myself with the grief. I need to care for all the layers of grief, care for all of those things in my grief journey. And it, when I tend to it, it's more of a, I know it sounds so counterintuitive because grief is so painful and excruciating, but it's just like this thing, because it's the love that we have for them. That's why it hurts so much, because we miss them and we love them so much. And so when we can tend to that garden of grief, it can make so many things in our life so much better, rather than when we try to ignore it and to shove it down. And it can cause so much damage in so many ways in our life if we don't tend to the grief. And so I guess that's kind of why I think of it as a garden.
Yeah. I love that metaphor of the garden, because it's something that, you know, a garden left on its own, the weeds are going to grow, you know, the pests are going to come. And so for a garden to actually be beautiful and pleasant, you need to get your hands dirty in it. You need to go and pull out the weeds. You need to put some manure in. You need to water it. You need to tend to it on a daily basis. And when you do tend to it on a daily basis, then you can reap the benefits of beautiful flowers or beautiful fruit that eventually are going to come. And I say eventually because with anything that is organic, it's not going to be an overnight thing. You know, you don't actually have a person that you love died and then a week later, a month later, a year later, kind of go, oh yeah, now I have all, I'm ripping all the benefits of, you know, going through grief. Because like you said, grief is something that is now part of your life, and it is organic, like a garden. You have to put the work in, and then eventually there are good fruits that come from it. I can testify to that, but also it's a never ending getting my hands dirty in it, leaning into it, you know, watering it, and my God, putting manure in, and it stinks. It never ends, right? But one of the things that is really interesting for me listening to you, I'm making some notes here, and you know, you talked a little bit about the body. And if we think in terms of this metaphor of the garden, we're talking about like, where is the soil? Where is the foundation where we carry our grief? And I used to be a dancer for many years. And so my body was something that was, you know, my instrument of work was very connected to my body. My whole life, I have been very connected to my body. And when Jason died, the place where I felt grief the most was in my body. Of course, it was a mental distress. It was an emotional upheaval, but really was like my body. I felt the pain in my body, literally in my bones. I remember saying to my doctor, I went to him and said, I think I have bone cancer because my bones ache. My bones are heavy. And he was great, and he was able to talk me through, you know, like, what is it your bones are doing? What is it that your body's doing? Your body wants to grieve. You need to let it grieve. And mm-hmm. I became disconnected from my body for some time because of the work that I was doing was quite cerebral. And then grief was calling me back to go back into that foundation of going, I feel it right on my chest as a tightness. I can't take the breath in, or I feel right at the pit of my stomach, like I feel nauseated all the time, or mm-hmm. my bones are aching, or my muscles feel like stone. And so I had to kind of learn how to embody my grief. And you talked about that a little bit because you said that you felt like your body was stuck, you know, mm-hmm. because of the traumas of seeing Aria dead and everything that came with it. And I can't even imagine being, you know, at the last term of your pregnancy and going through all of this, because your body was also the house of another human being. Mm-hmm. And then you having all these bodily experiences of PTSD. And you talked about your psychologist, your therapist, helping you to feel the emotions in your body. So can you talk a little bit about that, like that bodily aspect of grief? How was that for you? And what are some of the things that you have learned about yourself and about carrying the grief, being really aware of your body in it?
Yeah, for sure. This is like the thing I love to talk about the most. So
yay!
I was terrified of feeling any pain or emotions like my whole life. I would have rather, you know, kind of like stopped a relationship in order to not talk about like hard things and feel the pain that comes with it. And I feel like grief really forced me into connecting with my body and going inside, because it has a way of teaching us that we cannot ignore it. I imagine, like I like a lot of metaphors, but I think of grief as like you're shoving this big, huge, giant beach ball underneath the water, and we are exhausted. It's exhausting to hold it there. We get so tiring, and eventually it will explode out if we don't take it out ourselves. It's going to explode out. It's going to hurt other people. It's going to hurt us. It's going to seriously hurt so many things in our life. And if we can take it out and begin to, you know, hold space for it, it's kind of how I imagine the emotions in our body. Like, they are so intense. I know it feels like if you let the emotion in that you're going to die with it. Like, it is so intense. And especially with grief, it's like the most pain you've ever known in your life.
Yeah.
And that depth and intensity and duration with child loss is so deep that it's like, I can't even survive this pain. That's what it feels like. But what I have learned for myself, when I have that, if you imagine like a wave building up in your body, or their grief is building up in your body, when you take time to sit and hold space for that emotion, you go internal, you start to process it. I do a lot of guided meditations with the moms that I work with to feel the emotions in their body and really experience them, so that you can get it from inside to outside almost. Like, you can, when you sit with the emotion, when you acknowledge it, when you let it be there without judgment. So often we judge it, especially like anger. Everyone doesn't like to feel anger because you don't want to be an angry person. You've always been taught that anger is bad. You all these things about anger. And so we fight it and we're like, no, I don't want to feel the anger. But when you let go of that judgment of the anger as a bad emotion, you let it be there and you allow it to flow through your body. You allow it to be there without trying to get rid of it, forcing it out, shoving it down. It is amazing what happens. It softens, it changes, it shifts, and it's never as scary as we make it in our minds. As soon as we hold space for it, as soon as we begin to let it process, it can get more intense for a little bit, but then it gets softer and lighter. And then it's like, wow, I actually feel better because I let myself process the emotion rather than fighting it. So instead of fighting it all the time, and it's always like a high energy there that you're battling with it, you sit in it and it might get more intense for a little bit, but it always gets lighter.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm having so many amazing insights as you're talking, because it is so true. Like, one of the things that I have learned is that you know, there's the waves of grief. I think grief for me, I'm very visual. So the grief that I felt like this massive tsunami, right? Mm-hmm. And so every wave was just like so intense and so terrifying. But what I've learned was that when I dive into it, when I allow myself to feel the anger, to feel the pain, to feel the sadness, to feel the discombobulation, like when I go into it, it's petrifying, like you're saying, mm-hmm. but it will subside because like every wave, it comes and then it goes. If mm-hmm. we allow that cycle to, you know, flow through our bodies, then it becomes so much easier for us to face the next wave.
Yeah.
But if we keep on, like you said, you know, trying to hold back and trying to not feel the feelings because we're so petrified of what's going to happen, because it feels like you're going to die, really. Mm-hmm. Like some of it can be so intense that you feel like I cannot handle this. I'm going to die or I'm going to harm myself to stop feeling the pain.
Yeah.
But when you actually lean into it, when you go with the flow of the emotion and it intensifies to that peak, and then it subsides. And when it subsides, then there are so many things there for us to pay attention to, because those emotions that we're feeling, they are trying to tell us something that is much deeper. And if we never allow them to flow, if we never go through the cycle and close the emotion cycle, then we can't discover what the emotion was trying to tell us. And then guess what? The emotions will keep on coming and coming and coming mm-hmm. until one day you kind of go, you have a breakdown mm-hmm. because you can't keep that beach ball under the water long enough, and unless it explodes and you get hurt or you're gonna hurt other people.
Yep. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
I'm echoing.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was echoing for a second in yours. Sorry.
Oh, were you echoing? Is our Zoom meeting, so technology is not my friend, but
yeah. Yeah, it's good now. I'm not echoing anymore, but I was for a second. So I just wanted to make sure. So something that I wanted to say off of that was I learned, I think it was from Brené Brown, but I'm not sure if it was in the book, The Gifts of Imperfection, about how, okay, so we fight the emotion, right? We don't want to feel the pain. But the thing that I learned is when we numb our emotions, we don't get to choose which emotions we numb. When we start numbing emotions, we numb all of them. We numb joy, we numb anger, we numb guilt, we numb sadness. So we're numbing any possibility of joy as well. And I always think of when I feel my emotions, when I allow myself to go into that hole of grief and process that depth. So you imagine like the depth of pain I knew before Aria was not anything compared to what I know now. But you know, the depth of joy or the height of joy that I felt before Aria was not anything that I know now either. So the depth of pain that I allow myself to feel, when you feel it and you don't numb it, you're also opening up that expanse above to feel joy as well. So when we numb everything. And when we feel, we allow ourselves to feel the full expression of all the emotions that are possible to us.
Mm. That is so profound. Like, and I heard Brené Brown talking about that too, you know, that we try to numb the sadness, right? And in how, whichever way we try to numb it, we try to numb it with alcohol, we try to numb it with work, we try to numb it with drugs, we try to numb it with being busy and doing things for our church, for our children, for whatever. And so it's not the thing itself that I actually think is bad. What I think it's toxic for us is the numbing. And mm-hmm. so when, yeah, you said something that's so profound, that the expense of what we can feel, like if the pain is really intense, then on the other side of that pain, because pain is just one side of the equation, right? One side of the coin. On the other side, there's a, you know, an equal positive or more life-giving or more lighter emotion that we are also numbing. If we don't face one, we strip the other one away. And so going back, I'm so fascinated with this. And I have struggled with PTSD as well. But I wanted to hear about your process from it. Like, so you start having all this bodily experience of trauma, right? Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about what was that like, and what was the things that you actually did to move your body or to create new neural pathways into finding space for other emotions such as joy or happiness or hope? But mm-hmm. also with that, you know, keeping in mind that the body was very much a part of it, because PTSD is not just in your head, right? It's in your mm-hmm. brain, but it's also very much a physical experience. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I would absolutely love to, because this is another thing I'm passionate about, because I didn't realize like this could actually happen to me. You know, I felt pretty, even though I've had some things in my life, I felt pretty like, okay, you know, I didn't, when I experienced trauma, I had never felt so out of control of my body, so out of control of my mind. So often I felt like I was going crazy. And before I learned that it was trauma that I was living with, I was like, what is wrong with me? Like I would have, so I had two other boys, you know, and they would be sleeping downstairs, and I was so terrified to go check on them. Because I found Ari in the morning, and I would just sit in my bed and I would go down there. My heart is pounding the whole way down the stairs, just absolutely terrified. And I'd go check on them. And a few times I'm screaming at them, you know, thinking they're dead. And it was just horrific, because it just happens again and again and again. And there was no, like, there was no amount of thinking I could do that would stop it, you know, amount of praying that I could do that would stop me from going through this process of my body was stuck in this state, in this memory of finding my daughter dead. Mm. And so it thought, because I was stuck in this trauma, that it was happening again and again and again. So I believed with every single cell in my body that this was happening again. It was real every single time until I realized that they were breathing and they were fine. But until that moment, you know, 1 second or 3 seconds is an absolute lifetime when you're living in that moment. And eventually I started to just sit in my bed and not go check on them. And I would start beating myself up. Like, what kind of mom are you? You believe your kids are dead downstairs and you're just sitting in your bed, you know, waiting for them. So I'd wait for them to come upstairs to me and come into my bedroom, because they're old enough to get out of their beds. And I was, you know, pretend I was sleeping. I'd be like, nope, I'm still sleeping. And I was like, I really judged myself. I was like, what is wrong with you? You know, and then I learned that avoidance was a huge thing with trauma, and that that's a normal thing that people experience. And I was like, it felt like a huge weight lifted off my shoulders, that I could let go of the judgment and be like, you know what, this is something I'm experiencing that's normal. And then I learned about all the other symptoms that I was, you know, it's a very physical sensations, my heart pounding, you know, my going like lightheaded, and all these experiences that I experienced, I learned that they're normal with trauma. And then I was like, okay, I have trauma. So now how do I deal with this? How do I get through this? Because I tend to be somebody who's like, I'm not going to live like this the rest of my life. So now what do I do? And I was really blessed to have it can be really exhausting to try to find someone to help you. And just the way that it worked, I ended up finding somebody fairly quickly once I understood I had trauma, who did EMDR. So eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's really it's a modality that is where I held some buzzers in my hands. Some people do like eye movement back and forth. But you do this EMDR while you process memories and emotions that come up.
So EMDR is quite a kinesthetic type of therapy, right? So you're holding something in your hand, or you're moving your eyes. And so you're connecting your brain to doing something with your body. Is that right?
Yeah, in a way, it. So this is how I think of it, because it was buzzed back and forth between your right and your left, and I have learned more about trauma and now, but this is the way I have always thought of it, and it really helped me understand kind of how it was helping me. So I imagine that, you know, when I experienced the trauma of finding Aria, my whole, you know, you have your pathways that connect your right side and your left side of your brain. And I imagined that they all just snapped. They cut in half, and my right side and my left side of my brains couldn't communicate with each other. And so EMDR was, and so my brain believed that, you know, that experience was happening again and again, because my other side of my brain couldn't tell it that actually we're safe, we're okay. Mm-hmm. Even though that happened, it's not happening again and again. And so EMDR really helps rebuild those pathways and rebuild memories so that you're not living in that constant fight or flight, stuck, you know, terrified state every single day. So it really can file that memory as a memory in the past and not something you're living every single day.
This is fascinating because I experienced, and now it's rare, like it's not happening as often. I can go months and months without having this type of experience. But, and I don't even know what the triggers are. It can be something completely random. I might be at the supermarket and then I see something that my husband liked to eat or something that we bought once and he didn't like. I don't know, random things like that. And then all of a sudden, I'm flooded with a feeling of panic and my hands start like getting really clammy and I start sweating like really cold sweat, but I'm really hot and then I can't breathe. And then my legs, I feel like I can't move my legs. Literally, I'm stuck in that place. Like I can't go, I can't stay. And my breathing changes. I get lightheaded, like all sorts of things. And I did not know that this was a form of PTSD. And so in those moments, what happens for me is that my brain takes me right back to seeing my husband's body. And so it's really upsetting when it happens because there's a part of my brain that's going, you're in a supermarket, you're safe, everything is okay. It's been 2 years, it's been 3 years. And yet my body doesn't know that because mm-hmm. this other part of my brain is right back to that moment. And it's the most bizarre thing because it feels like I'm observing myself going through that. And initially I was feeling paranoid. I'm like, I'm losing my mind. But, you know, with a lot of therapy, a lot of work, now I kind of found that, you know, through therapy, reconnecting those two sides of my brain and creating new neural pathways, I can just go back to my breath and take a moment and allow that emotion to be there without any shame of what will people think, because really, who cares? And going back to my breathing, you know, going back to touching something that I can ground myself and taking those deep breaths in and exhaling really slowly to calm down my sympathetic system and come back to that, you know, homeostasis and go, here is where I am. I'm in the supermarket and, mm-hmm. and I'm okay. And I survived this one more time. Mm-hmm. Initially when Jason died in the first couple of years, I had those all the time and it's terrifying. Mm-hmm.
It is, because it's like the biggest loss of feeling of control. Like you don't have any control over it. Like I had many moments of, because my daughter was born 4 weeks after Aria died. And I had many moments of like, you know, somebody else had told me that they just, you know, pray to God and put their baby into God's hands and then they go to bed and they're fine because, you know, whatever. And I was like, well, that doesn't work for me. I put her down. I make sure she's completely safe. She has no blankets around her. She's on her back. And I lay down and 5 minutes later, I pop up and my body is panicking. My heart's pounding mm-hmm. and I believe she's dead and I'm shaking her. And, you know, it's like there was no way to like think my way out of it. My body was just responding without any control from me. And I guess I want to share another quick way of thinking about trauma as I've learned about trauma. Have you ever heard of somatic experiencing?
Yes. Yeah. I just did a course online on somatic therapy. Yeah.
So I want to share just a little thing that I've learned about it, just because it talks so much about the sensations in our body and really getting that trauma energy out of your body and like finishing the trauma response. So something that I thought was really powerful was something that animals do in nature is say they are in like a, you know, get chased by a predator or something, and then they get away and they're safe. Animals in nature don't get traumatized. They get away and then they shake. They shake, 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 and they get all of that trauma energy. So all of the stuff, like the adrenaline, all of that stuff that came in their bodies to help them get away or help them try to, you know, your body is going into a place of trying to get you out of a situation. But so often we don't get that energy out of our bodies. And that's what happens with trauma, is that then it stays stuck in your body. And when we release that trauma energy and process the sensations of it and going within and getting it out, that can be so, so helpful.
Yeah. And I've experienced that. And I think that's incredible. And just a couple of days ago, I was talking to a friend of mine about this exact thing. And her mom, she lost her brother, and her mother does that. So she, you know, lays on the floor and starts shaking her legs. And she is doing the shaking, but I don't know exactly how to do it because I haven't done it myself, but apparently eventually your muscles start shaking itself. And like what you said, I love the way you put it, which is finishing the trauma response. I call it closing the cycle of that emotion, because you have a jolt of adrenaline, right? There's a fight or flight response from your amygdala. You feel unsafe. There is a trigger. And all of a sudden, there is this adrenaline rushing through your body and causing all sorts of havoc in your body. You feel completely out of control, like you said. And then what do? You need to find a way to close that cycle, because like what you mentioned about animals, like they go and, you know, there's a lion, the gazelle is running, the lion didn't catch the gazelle shakes all off, and that will close that cycle of that adrenaline jolt that it felt. And what we do as human beings is we hold all this adrenaline, we hold all this cortisol, highly stressed responses that we have, we never really process them through our body. And so we live in our heads, and then we try to rationalize things. We try to talk ourselves out of things, or what we do subconsciously, sometimes for some people consciously, we start blaming ourselves. Why am I weak? What's wrong with me? And then we internalize all that shame and all that guilt. And so talking is a part of healing, but it's not all of it. Mm-hmm. We need to have those physical responses, and people need to find what works for them. And for me, I know that yoga, and I say this, like yoga changed my life. Yoga actually helped to save my life after my husband died. Just to go to a yoga class, connect with my breath, stretching my body and feeling like I cannot hold this pose, and feeling my body shaking and breathing through the pain or the discomfort. And then coming to an end of a class, I would lay down there and just weep. I think people in my yoga class just thought something was definitely wrong with me. Because I did not go to make friends. I went in, I put my yoga mat on the floor, and I did my class. I cried every single time at the end of class. The yoga teacher was beautiful. She would come and put some essential oils on us, and I would just weep. And then I would roll my mat and get out of there as quickly as possible. And I did that for a whole year. But what that did for me was that yoga helped me to connect with my breath. It helped me to calm my mind and to be present in my body. So I could go to talk therapy, and that helped a lot. But it was a combination of lots of things. And then eventually, just this last year, I start dancing again. And there are times when I put some music on and there were songs that my husband used to sing for me and the girls, and we used to dance around the house, and I might be weeping and dancing at the same time. And I found that just that finishing that trauma response, I might just go to the floor and weep and weep and weep and then get back up and dance, dance, dance. And then next thing you know, I am smiling. I am just feeling a release in my body. Mm-hmm. And that has been really helpful for me. So, okay. So now we talked a little bit about talking about it.
Can I say one thing really quick?
Yeah, sure.
Sorry. I just wanted to say, because we talked about trauma and grief, and we're talking about both. And I want to say that trauma, so they're very similar in so many ways. And trauma, I believe, can be healed. Like, I don't want to say 100% because I know it lives with me still, but it doesn't have to affect you the way that it does now. And that grief is something that we can process and learn to carry. It can get lighter, but it's with us the rest of our life. So to me, there's a distinction that trauma can be healed and grief is something we carry with us. So sorry, I just wanted to get that in there. Sorry.
Thank you for saying that, because I think we get those two really mixed up. And like, grief is not, it's not an illness. It's not something that you medicate.
No.
It's not something that you heal from, but trauma is. And yeah, thank you for making that distinction, because I think that a lot of people think that taking antidepressants for their grief, or, you know, whatever it is that they feel like that their grief becomes a pathology, but it's not. It's a human experience that can help to reshape our way of thinking, our embodiment, our place in the world, and then what we do carrying that grief. Because what we were saying before, when we were first talking before we start recording, was that because of Aria, because of, you know, her death, because of Jason's death, here we are today connecting with each other and doing the work that we do to be of service to other people. And so our grief in so many ways has become a gift, right? It's not easy and it's not happy, but in some ways our grief has become something that we are passionate about to create a more holistic platform for other people to have this human experience, knowing that they are not, there's not something wrong with them, and that they don't need to be treated or be healed by their grief. They can carry their grief and in some ways find a path where, as they are walking with their grief, learning how to carry their grief, then you can then become of service to other people. You can be more in touch with yourself, and your grief can then become a sort of a platform for you to have a deeper connection to God, to other people, and with yourself as well. I totally believe that.
Yep, I agree.
Now, something that I wanted to talk about is that I love this phrase that you have this workshop that's called Stop Talking, Start Feeling. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Because I think we kind of covered some of it as we go along, but I really want to talk specifically about the workshop, about how did you come up with this title? I love it.
Because it is really, that's what I want people to do, is to stop talking and start feeling. Because I think we get so caught up in, like, our mind and our body are connected, right? And we get so caught up in only talking and only, you know, going to therapy and only saying what's going on with us. And we don't sit and feel. We don't take some time to go within. We tell everybody that, you know, and I get that you might think, no, I'm in so much pain, you don't understand. I do feel it. And I want to just like ask you, do you really feel it? Do you really sit with it? Or do you feel it and fight it? Because there's a difference between feeling it and fighting it and feeling it and sitting with it. And what I am doing in this workshop is really, it has three parts. The first part is all about emotions and how to navigate the thoughts and the emotions that come up in grief, and really noticing how to process those emotions, how to think about emotions so they're not so scary, and noticing that emotions are normal. Like you said, grief is normal. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with any of us who are grieving. We're grieving. It's not something we have to get rid of. It's something when you understand how grief works and understand that grief is not your enemy, it's really something you can hold on to and care for. So that's what the first section is. The second two are specifically meditations, and I do emotional freedom technique tapping for guilt and sadness, because these are a lot, you know, two big emotions. There's so many other emotions, anger and all these other emotions that come up for sure. But I just wanted to do those two for now in this mini, you know, mini course workshop thing. So it's sadness and guilt. And it's really all the tools that I have that I do with the moms that I work with to help them process any guilt that they're feeling or carrying or any sadness that they have. So it's going within your body and going into what are the thoughts that are causing me these emotions? And then what does sadness feel like? What does guilt feel like? And then tapping is amazing in a way. Have you ever done that before?
Yeah, I've done EFT. It's really great.
Yeah. So I do, I have different videos that I do that help specifically for sadness and guilt with child loss that help process all the thoughts and the emotions that come up with that.
Mm, that's wonderful. I'm really interested in like exploring some other things with you, because one of the things that we haven't really talked about was, you know, how do you embody your grief and hold your experience and feel the feelings and sit with it, knowing that you still need to get up, change a diaper, breastfeed, look after toddlers. They have so much energy. You know, children that are also grieving, when you're a mother that you're grieving. But I am so conscious of our time. And what I think I might have to do is to hold all of this and just give it a taste to, you know, to our listeners and have you back. Because I think this is going to be another episode. I think this is really important, because as mothers, we have all this responsibility, right, to children that depend on us. And they depend on us physically, financially, emotionally. And so, but when you're falling apart, how do you care for younger children or adolescents, you know? And so that's a whole nother episode. I just want to give it a taste to people. I'm going to talk to Megan and convince her to come back so we can do an episode on that. But on that note, I just wanted to ask you, Megan, is there any other things that within what we talked today, you know, about the feeling the grief in your body, or any other things on what we touched today that you also want to share now as we come into a close?
Yeah, I guess we talked a lot about it in that, specifically what you're saying about, you know, how to raise kids. That's totally, I agree, a whole nother topic, a whole nother subject, another layer of grief. But I just want to remind anyone that's listening that grief isn't the enemy. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with the pain that you're feeling. You don't have to, you know, just pick yourself up and try to be your normal self because you're a different person. You're not the same person that you were. That's a whole nother thing with grief as well. You know, grieving the loss of who we were before we knew such pain, and really just being gentle with yourself and letting go of the judgment that you have of how you're doing it wrong and how you should be doing it differently. And really, like, I would love to encourage you to, you know, come get my workshop. It's, you go to meganhilika.com/workshop, and it's Stop Talking, Start Feeling. This can be an incredible way for you to begin to connect with your emotions, begin to understand that the grief you feel is normal, and that the emotions, like understanding emotions more so that you can, it's really tools to take for the rest of your life. It's tools to process the emotions of grief, but then we feel emotions every day. We're emotional creatures and, you know, human beings, and we need to learn how to process them and feel them so they don't get stuck. When they get stuck in our bodies, we can get sick. We can act in ways that we don't want to. We are driven by our emotions. And when you can really hold space for them, so much can change. It doesn't take away grief, but it can make things so much lighter.
Yeah, that is so true and so, so necessary. I think we live in at a time and place that we are not encouraged to feel our emotions unless that they are the so-called good emotions. And to mm-hmm. me, every emotion is good. You know, mm-hmm. They might not feel great, but every emotion is there for a reason, and learning how to sit with them, to feel them, to honor them. It's learning how to create a life that is actually flourishing. If we go back to that garden, you know, just creating a life that feels like a beautiful garden, that it's hard work, but it's so worth it. And I think that just from what you're saying, you know, one of the things that I can take from this talk, so many things I can take from this conversation, but one is that when we learn how to truly embrace our grief, and that's a process, you know, some days it's a hit and miss.
Oh, but totally.
Right. Yeah. But by embracing our grief, then we can make room to embrace true joy without guilt. Because mm-hmm. I remember the first time that I laughed, like really laughed, after Jason died, I stopped myself because I felt so guilty. Because I was happy, you know, and that was like, I don't know, probably about 6-7 months after. And it was my youngest daughter. She is just like the little clown in the family. She did something that was so funny. And I had this like laughter that was like a belly laugh. And I hadn't laughed like that in ages. And then I stopped and I felt like that was a moment of joy that I pushed away from me. Mm-hmm. So in this thing of grieving, we want to feel the joy, but if we don't fully embrace our grief, then the moments of true joy that comes, we are going to be pushing them away as well. Because then there's another emotion that comes in it, which is guilt, you know? Mm-hmm. And so ain't nobody got time for guilt. I can tell you that. I can tell you that right now. Guilt can go and just like, sorry, but guilt can go somewhere else because ain't nobody got time for it. Megan, I just wanted to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for today. And I do want you to come back. Please come back because we have so much more to talk about. But I wanted to also, honor Aria and honor you as a mother that has had to go through the most horrific experience. I wanted to say thank you for Aria's life, you know, however many months she had, to be here as a gift to you and your family, and now to me and to the people listening, because if it wasn't for her life, you would not be here being of service and bringing so much hope and healing to other people. So I want to honor her and everything that she brought into your life and what she continues to bring into your life. I also want to honor my husband, because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be the woman I am today. And if it wasn't for his death, I would not have come to the place where I am today. And so we honor those whom we love and we miss them. And at the same time, we carry them in everything that we do. And I just want to say thank you so much for being so brave and so so humble, and to offer your wisdom to us today. It's been such an amazing pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. It really has been great. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you honoring Aria and Jason. It's really a special, they're both special, and I know he's in your heart forever, and Aria's in my heart forever, for sure. Yeah. Thank you.
You are so welcome, so welcome. Thank you very much for making the time to be here at Crazy Grief. And come back. Please come back.
I sure can.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks.
We have come to the end of our episode. And I want to acknowledge you, my darling, who have been listening to this conversation. Thank you so much for your time and your attention. Chances are you found Crazy Grief because you are grieving the death of your person, or you want to support someone who is grieving.
I am so sorry our paths have crossed in this way, but I am glad we found each other. My email is on the show notes. Please reach out. I would love to hear from you. Do subscribe to this podcast and leave us a 5-star rating so we can continue to produce more meaningful conversations about grief. And remember, you're not going crazy. You're just grieving. Take a moment to breathe, reach out to someone you trust, and be kind to yourself. Light and peace.